The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill, WLR's business programme.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Well, we know at the moment that there's quite a lot happening to the global economy, some of it quite shaky in terms of tariffs and other issues. And a lot of people are on tenterhooks about what's going to happen in the next couple of years. Some really important research has been carried out with Irish SME leaders. And this research was carried out by Fitzgerald Power, which of course is an accountancy practice based in Waterford, employing almost 90 people in Waterford. Really looking forward to hearing more about what came out of this survey. Stuart Fitzgerald is the CEO of Fitzgerald Power and he joins me in studio. Stuart, good evening. How are you?
Great, thanks, Mary. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks very much for coming back onto the show. It's always really interesting to chat to you. For listeners unaware, even though I think most people probably do know about Fitzgerald Power at this stage, can you give us a brief overview?
Absolutely. So we're a 90-person practice based out of the southeast in Waterford. We're probably one of Ireland's fastest growing professional services businesses, growing at an annual compound annual growth rate of 30%. It's been a great time to be building a professional services business in Waterford, Mary. The talent pool is really good. The infrastructure is excellent. We get lots of great local support and we're loving it. It's going really well at the moment.
And I know that a lot of the work you do is actually with SMEs, isn't it, in Waterford and beyond as well, right around the country?
So it's all over Ireland, actually.
Yeah.
People always assume that a huge amount of our work is based in the southeast, but really it's up and down the country with a very small amount of it in the UK as well. But it's all SME. It's all SME business. So it's all entrepreneur-owned businesses, ambitious management teams that are looking to bring their business to the next level. And they're great to work with.
And there's crazy statistics about the amount of business in Ireland that is actually SME or the amount of employment. And, you know, I think we often think, oh, God, multinationals are kind of our bread and butter. But when you hear the statistics around the level of SME activity in the country, it's quite staggering, isn't it?
So more than 99% of enterprises are SMEs. 2/3 of all jobs are provided by SMEs. But the FDI sector is so important to Ireland in terms of the tax take, in terms of the export led growth in the economy. But, you know, I really think that SMEs are the lifeblood of the economy. And you know something, Mary, when you walk up and down the average high street, what you do see is really good privately owned businesses that over the last couple of years have found it more and more difficult to eke out profit. It's becoming more difficult, more challenging to operate an SME, particularly outside of Dublin, particularly in the regions. So I think, look, while it's a great time to own a business, businesses need support as well.
Yeah.
And it can't all just be about the FDI sector in Ireland. It can't just be all about the corporation tax return take from a very concentrated number of very big international companies. We have to support SMEs as well.
Sure. And I'm really looking forward to drilling down into some of the research. But can you outline some of the biggest challenges? I think we hear about rising energy costs and costs of living and obviously rates and overheads and that all the time. Are they the main things or do you feel that there's not enough support maybe at government level for SMEs in general?
No, look, I think government is doing what government can. I think government's took a lot of flack from different independent bodies in terms of the budget and the overheating economy. So I think there's it's a very difficult balance to strike, to be fair. I think when you look at the support that the hospitality sector got in terms of the VAT rate reduction, that's going to be very important in terms of supporting those businesses. So when I talk about support, I mean, I think we need to find different ways to support ambitious management teams to get their businesses off the island a bit. But just to take the point on in terms of there is cost inflation and it is difficult to manage and there's only so much you can pass on to the customer.
Of course. Okay, so you surveyed a significant number of SME leaders. What were you trying to achieve from this? What were you trying to find out when you did this survey?
What we were finding, anecdotally before we carried out the research is that the SME sector in Ireland is underserved when it comes to strategic planning. So what does that mean? It means in terms of the actual strategic plan that guides the business, the operating system that's the drumbeat of the business, the finance system that measures success, like really deliberate value planning to really build shareholder wealth, and then tax planning. So there was no, we felt from our own work with SMEs that there was nothing that was joining up the sort of supports that SMEs needed to build a proper plan. So we carried out a survey to to see if that anecdotal evidence stacked up.
Okay, and a lot of interesting points came out of that survey, especially around exports. So talk me through this one. Irish SMEs account for just 30% of total exports, and while 64% are targeting international markets, they do find scaling globally very challenging. So talk to me a bit more about that.
It is extremely difficult to get a small business off the island in terms of establishing an international revenue base. I mean, look, Ireland in some ways is a bit of an outlier because so much of the economy is driven by the FDI community and all of that is effectively exported. So of that economic value is exported. So when you look at the SME community, it's always going to be a smaller subset. But Mary, we have a very small local domestic economy. If we can't find ways to grow really good indigenous businesses that can compete internationally, we're always going to be tethered to a very concentrated base of international companies.
So what solutions can we look at here? I mean, Enterprise Ireland are obviously, you know, pivotal for companies in the space that you're referring to. But is there anything else there? Is there anything else that can help these SMEs, or did any of them express how they could be helped in other ways?
No, look, I think a lot of them are figuring it out themselves. So yes, Enterprise Ireland is a fantastic organisation, but it's a challenging landscape. So There are supports, and I think we're maturing as an economy. We're maturing in terms of the supports that are available. We're maturing in terms of the ambition of management teams and of entrepreneurs. But lots of us are figuring it out for ourselves. It's like, how do we internationalize our business? What do we need to look at? Where do we go? And to be fair, it's a difficult journey to go on, and it's difficult to join all the dots, particularly when you're busy. As an SME owner, as an entrepreneur, you are firefighting. Everything is coming at you. The HR issues are coming at you. You're worried about growth and international growth. So figuring all that out isn't without challenge.
Okay. The other thing then that we're looking at is an exit plan. Only 33%, so a third, in other words, of SME owners have an exit plan, meaning that they're risking leaving money on the table. Now, am I right in saying there was something in the budget about exit tax? Have I got that right?
You 100% have. Yeah. So it's really interesting. And actually, this is a subset of the same points that came out of the survey. So look, to deal with your first question first, only 33% of the SME owners that we surveyed have an exit plan. So while they were quite sophisticated, this survey cohort, in terms of their strategic planning, their actual exit planning was an afterthought. And, you know, maybe the conclusion to draw from that is that maybe people assume that shareholder value accretes naturally if you have a strategic plan in place, but it doesn't always. So there needs to be a deliberate, conscious decision to join up the actual exit planning, value accretion plan for shareholders alongside the strategic plan. So a strategic plan can be great in terms of mapping the growth of the business, the markets you're going to attack, how you're going to build out the management team, the areas you're going to address in terms of bringing your product or service to the market. But how does that actually join up with the requirement of shareholders to build real value so that at some point in the future, particularly for smaller liquid companies, as most SMEs are, that you can really see the value for all the years of hard work. Mm-hmm. But to get to your point then about entrepreneurs' relief, so yes, entrepreneurs' relief from 2026 will move from €1 million to €1.5 million. And what we found when we looked at the survey results is that while exit planning was poor, so was tax planning.
Okay.
So tax planning as well, people weren't reviewing tax plans regularly. I think 2 years was the average interval between the review of tax plans if they were in place, Mary. And like, if there's a change as came up in the recent budget, are you on top of that? Do you really know what it means in terms of the wealth you're looking to maintain and retain?
And this might be a bit of a how long is a piece of string question, but we'll say you're, I don't know, a 47-year-old who owns their own business and you want to retire when you're 58, should you start exit planning like a decade in advance, or should you actually be exit planning kind of from the get-go?
Like they do say in some instances that the day you start your business is the day you need to be thinking of selling it. So who's the ultimate owner for your business? What's the route to exit? What does the overall plan look like from a family perspective, from a personal perspective? Mm-hmm. So no, 100%, you are not too early to be considering your exit. If you're a 47-year-old entrepreneur who's worked really hard to bring your business from point A to point B, you need to have a very deliberate focus on what's going to get you to the next stage and what's ultimately the plan to To move the business on to the next owner.
Okay. I know there's tons of research and people will be able to find it, I'm sure, online if they want. But I do want to just talk about, I suppose, tracking KPIs. And this is all about maybe, again, this probably goes back to not having good sort of systems and processes in place. But a lot of SMEs, almost a third, 27%, don't have a defined process for tracking KPIs, according to the Fitzgerald Power research. So they're kind of lacking accountability, or maybe not seeing their own trajectory enough then?
100%. So look, what gets measured gets managed.
Yeah.
And there can be a lack of sophistication when it comes to really looking at the key levers that SME owners can pull to drive value in their business. And how can you identify those levers? The only way you can really identify them is if you have a proper measurement system to understand the impact of the strategic moves that you're making. So the financial systems that measure performance in SMEs can at times be unsophisticated, and the suite of KPIs that SMEs are using to track their progress can be unsophisticated. So it's really important to deliberately build a finance system that properly tracks performance and that complements the operating system that governs the business and complements the strategic plan that's setting the North Star for where you want to get to. And if all of that is in place, you've earned the right, I guess, to focus on an exit plan that'll make sense for the shareholders.
So a bit of investment maybe in a CMS system and all those kind of things to kind of keep everything running together, I suppose.
It's stepping back from the problem. It's stepping above the fray a little bit. It's thinking about, what do I really need to understand to know if I'm on the right track or not?
Okay.
You know, we can all be busy running around trying to put out every fire, but how do I really know that the steps I'm taking are really deliberately building value into my business and that we're really on track against the plan?
Okay, brilliant stuff. We are unfortunately out of time. I know we probably only touched the surface of your survey. And you did say to me off air at the start that this survey was kind of from a very organised kind of bunch of leaders. So, you know, there might even be more problems under the bonnet, you know, across the board with SMEs as well.
We surveyed 80 very well-known SME businesses, and it does stand to reason that they may be more organised than the general SME community. So it does stand to reason that if you were to go deeper into SME Ireland, that the level of strategic planning and financial management may be less sophisticated than we saw in the survey.
Where can people find out more?
It's on our website, Mary. There's a 3-part white paper series that gets really deep into the results. And that's on fitzgeraldpower.ie.
Brilliant stuff. Stuart Fitzgerald, CEO of fitzgeraldpower.ie. Thanks very much for coming to studio and for joining the programme again. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mary.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Well, undoubtedly, if you're somebody who's buying a house or renovating a house or moving into a house of any description, you're probably going to be very focused on what your kitchen looks like. As a society, we've gone from, I suppose, enjoying the kitchen as a place to cook, as a smaller room in the house, to being, for many people, the centrepiece of a house and the heart of a house, where entertainment happens, where people sit around and chat, where people want all the light and the brightness and everything else. Colin Landers runs Landers Bespoke Carpentry and Joinery in beautiful Villierstown in West Waterford. He's in the business of kitchens, so much so that he's been selected as a finalist in the Ireland Kitchen Trade Guide, to the IKTG as it's known, those awards, which will be held in Belfast this November. And Colin has travelled to studio here in Waterford City, for which I'm very grateful. Colin, how are you doing?
Good, thanks for having me.
No bother at all. Tell us a bit about yourself and your business background.
Yeah, so my name is Colin Landers. I'm the owner of Landers Bespoke Carpentry, based in Villierstown, West Waterford. Business started back in September 2016. We mainly focus on bespoke kitchens and interiors and bespoke staircases, but kitchens will be our main thing.
Okay, so your whole background is carpentry.
Yeah. So I started my apprenticeship in 2003, done my 4 years up to 2007 and 2008, brought us right into the recession. Great times.
God, that must have been hard.
It was, luckily for the company I worked at. We were never off work. We were working 5 days a week, so it was great. We were a joinery, more so we were doing a lot of aspects of work, so we were able to cover a lot of areas, so we were kind of always able to jump from one to another. Then in 2000, worked there till 2013. I went to Australia for a year, Just done a bit of travelling and stuff with friends, and came back, went back to that crowd again for another 2 years, and I said I'll make the jump then. So in 2016 I started on my own then.
Okay, was that daunting?
Yes, I was contemplating with a while, and I suppose I just said I reckon I could give it a go. I was after, I thought I'd more, I was after gaining a bit of confidence in myself, and I said I'll give it a go, and I never really looked back.
So I did mention in the introduction that the way we kind of consider kitchens, I suppose, has really changed as a society. People might say Dermot Bannon has a lot to do with that. But that notion, again, if you know, in very old houses, often in a huge old house, the kitchen might be tiny.
Yeah.
Whereas now the kitchen is generally quite a big room in new houses, and it's also very much the focus of where people imagine themselves to spend a lot of time. So is that something that you've seen evolve over the years?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose with families, young families and stuff now, they want to be the kitchen, keep their eye on kids. So they want a big living room. They want a big open space, loads of light. I suppose like they want everything in one room, which is popular. Like even with extensions and stuff, it's a popular thing now. Like loads of light, loads of space.
Mm-hmm. And where does that kind of affect your decisions then if you're designing a bespoke kitchen for somebody?
Well, we try and get customers to come to us as soon as possible. Like when a lot of it will happen off the plans, say builders will recommend go and meet your kitchen guy now. You can plan out with windows, placements of fridges, just so it flows easy, just so it's a nice space to be in.
Okay. So is a lot of your business then kind of, once-off builds as opposed to housing estates, or do you do kind of a mix?
No, I just do once-off builds.
Okay.
We do a lot of one-off builds and a lot of renovations.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when people are doing renovations then, that must be really interesting in terms of a project, because you're, I suppose, often maybe looking at either extensions onto old houses or people who are totally gutting the inside of their house.
Yeah, it's enjoyable now. You get to meet them from an early side and they'll ask you their advice on other stuff and, you know, trying to give them as much feedback as you can. But it's enjoyable. The renovations are, I probably prefer them because there's a bigger wow factor in it. But no, they're definitely popular. I suppose where we're based in Villierstown, like we're 20 minutes from Dungarvan, like nearly all our work is in Dungarvan.
So okay.
Since the Greenway happened, it's flying, like it's absolutely flying. So it's great. So there's, oh geez, I'd say I didn't come out of Dungarvan in 2 years at work.
That's great.
Yeah.
In terms of styles and what people are looking for then, I mean, you've been running your company, Landers Bespoke Carpentry and Joinery, since 2016. So almost a decade. You're going to be celebrating 10 years next year. Yeah. Like even in that time, in that relatively short space of time, the styles have changed a lot, haven't they? And what people are looking for in a style of a kitchen.
Yeah, styles have changed. They've gone from like your traditional style shakers and stuff, and they've become more modern. People have gone bolder with colours.
Yeah.
Then you have your evolution of worktops. You've gone from granite to silestone, and Dekton is very popular now. So
what's Dekton?
Dekton is like it's like basically a fire clay tile, where you can chop on it. There's kind of no minding. It's maintenance free in a sense, like, you know, whereas with your traditional granite and marble, they're porous so they can stain.
Mm-hmm.
And your silestone has a temperature rating on it, so you could actually mark it and burn it, and you can't chop on it. Where Dekton, they're kind of moving forward. The silica has gone out of it as well, which is a big thing, big plus. All the industry is trying to go green.
Okay.
So it's just the way it's evolving. Like.
And in terms of the investment, I suppose, because kitchens are expensive, there's no denying it. And, you know, and I know a lot of people even, you know, I don't mean even, but even in housing estates, a lot of people will put extra money into their kitchen.
Yeah.
Are people hoping that they last then? They last them for life. They don't have to change and rip it out in 10 years or whatever.
Well, yeah, that's the aim of the game. Like you want to be spending within your means, but get the biggest bang for your buck. Like you don't want to be doing it another 10 years down the road. We don't want to be going, yes, we have loads of repeat customers, but we don't want to be going back doing a kitchen in another 10 years time. There's something wrong if we're doing that.
Okay, so that brings me, I suppose, to your craftsmanship then, and then this does lead into, you know, why you were nominated for an award. How important is craftsmanship and quality of produce and all those things?
Well, it's an integral part of our business, because if you are ringing me to come and do some work or get a quote, it's me you call. I go out and measure it. I talk you through everything. We build it back in the workshop. So there's myself, I have two guys part-time and one apprentice. So I'm over every aspect of the business. We go to fitting, we organise everything, basically. Mm-hmm. From if we need plasters, if we're doing renovation, if we need plasters, plumbers, electricians, we can do it as a one-stop shop. Like, so trying to stay on top of everything is important. So I'm able to keep a good eye on the quality.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. And that's obviously really important.
Yes, yeah, it's a big import. It's a big part of our selling point.
So, I mean, speaking of craftsmanship then, you guys have been shortlisted for the IKTG Awards. And just to remind people again what that stands for, it's the Ireland Kitchen Trade Guide Awards. So how did you hear about this? How did all this come about?
So the trade awards happen every 2 years and you put forward your own design. So
right.
Basically you enter the competition. There's 11 categories ranging from retailer of the year right through to the one we're in, which is contemporary design up to 35,000. So you enter basically your kitchen, you do your brief, and there's three judges then that pick from it. So we got nominated from a group of 170 to three.
Wow.
So yeah. I'm the only representation of anybody from Munster in the 11 categories. It's open to 32 counties, which is good. So mm-hmm. a lot of companies buy in the north and in Dublin. So it's grand. Like, we are probably the smallest company that's ever gone into this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were nominated in 2023 again.
Okay.
Yeah, but I didn't win it that time. But fingers crossed.
But to be nominated, and I know that's a cliche, yeah. And it's probably annoying for me to say that, you know, because you'd love to win. But it is phenomenal to be the only company in Munster nominated in 32 county.
It is a big thing. They said that. Well, they said that it's a big, big thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, talk to me more about when you say you designed a kitchen. So how does that work? Like, did you kind of create a kitchen showroom and did inspectors come down? Or what way does that work?
No, so we... It's a customer's kitchen.
Okay, basically. So you just entered some of your work.
We entered some of our work. So okay. It was a couple from Nogarvan came to us with plans for a contemporary build. So they want a contemporary kitchen. They wanted an oak veneered kitchen, handleless kitchen. So we went from an initial stage of plans to when the block started going up, we went to site, measured it all, priced it. They were happy then to go ahead forward with us. So as the builder was progressing, then we were able to meet the electricians to lay out sockets with where windows are going to be placed and with if we had to move any walls here or there. So it kind of like it was a long enough process. That build was about 14, 15 months, but we had a utility, sliding doors in it, a solid oak staircase in it. We had a lot going on. So like at the end of it, when we stepped back from it, like it was a lovely looking kitchen, like really detailed. So the awards then came about. It was time to enter something. I said, "Do you know what? I'll try this and see how it goes." Like,
and when you're not entering, do you have to give the whole story like that? That you gave me. Yeah.
So you enter all your photos. They give you like a questionnaire in a sense to fill out. So like it is. There's a lot of work in it. Like, you know, and I had a friend of my wife's gave us a hand with it. Now she's really good at all that, so she kind of looks after our social media side of it. So she was kind of looking after it. So like a lot of the credit will go to her with this. Like, so I do appreciate it. So we had to send all the stuff, and they came back then and had a look, and they were like the details. I suppose it's more a design element that someone will pick up, not your everyday customer in a sense, because it was kind of there was hidden details in it.
Sure.
Regards of the handles, the fixings had to be hidden. They had to be solid oak. The veneers had to be all matching, book matched. So a lot of detail.
Okay, so obviously the judges are really looking at all that kind of thing. So they're looking at the craftsmanship, but they're also looking for, I suppose, your creativity.
Yes.
And then how you wanted that to be a functional kitchen for people as well, which is so, that's all so important as well, isn't it? You have to kind of imagine someone walking around the kitchen and using it.
The customers will come with, like, it's not just me, like, it's they come with an idea and I just go, maybe we'll try this, maybe we'll try this. It doesn't always work, but like, we definitely got, I think we hit the nail on the head with this kitchen. Oh, it is a nice kitchen. Like,
what colour is it?
It's a white oak veneered plywood. And it's just lacquered clear, 0%. So it's basically a matte finish.
Wow, lovely.
Yeah, but it's like there's an element that surrounds a bookcase out of a picture window that looks out in the Cumber Mountains and stuff. Like, it's nice. Yeah, it's lovely.
Gorgeous, yeah. Gorgeous. Well, congratulations. So the awards are in Belfast in November. Will you all head up?
The Titanic Convention Centre. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a good few of us going. So
at the whole of Villierstown.
I've a big family. Like, I've five brothers and sisters. So there's a good few of them going to come with us. So,
you make a night of it.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, you'll let us know how you get on anyway. Yeah. But I mean, even like we said, to be nominated is amazing. Yeah. Where can people find out more about your company, Colin?
So a lot of it is through Instagram. Mm-hmm. So it's Landers Bespoke Carpentry is the handle. You can contact us via there or through WhatsApp as well. So,
Brilliant stuff. Great. Well, listen, well done. Thanks a million for coming in. And best of luck, as I said, in November, Colin Landers of Landers Bespoke Carpentry and Joinery, who's been selected as a finalist in the IKTG, which is the Irish Kitchen Trade Guide Awards, happening next month in Belfast. Thanks very much, Colin.
Thanks very much.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill, WLR's business programme.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Now, I am about to discuss a really exciting new venture. A new Irish fintech company, Global Health Capital, is designed exclusively for medical professions. And I suppose when you consider all the different systems that have to be integrated to run healthcare practices, it's really important that there are good software platforms behind them. One of the co-founders of this company is Graham Byrne, and I am delighted to say he joins me now. Graham, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Mary, and thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk about Global Health Capital on the radio.
No bother at all. I'm delighted to talk to you as well. Sounds like a really interesting venture. Give us a little bit about your own background first, I suppose, Graham, because I know you do have some very interesting, I suppose, nuggets from your career that brought you to this place.
Look, the short route to understanding what my career is that I've always worked in financial services, but about 20 years ago I made a complete change into non-bank lending, and I set up a company here in Ireland as probably, I think it was Ireland's first actually official non-bank lender, lending into the SME space. And I've worked on it in various different companies for the last 20 years. It's been an amazing experience, obviously challenging not just the banking institutions, but also paving a way for other very successful non-banks to come into the market, because obviously the market is well underserved.
Absolutely. And an interesting space to be in. And I'm guessing then that kind of gave you a broad knowledge of not just markets, but of different industries as well when you were meeting clients.
Yes. With regards to that particular journey, there is not an industry, not a business. I must have walked through the doors of 6,000-7,000 businesses over that 20 years, from startups all the way to mature corporates, family businesses, doing all sorts of different things up and down the country. And I think with that experience and a chance meeting of myself and David coming back together after 20 years, it was quite the chance meeting, because he was a customer of mine when ran Tesco Bank and I worked in GE Capital. And after 20 years, I got a phone call. He had, was working in the healthcare sector. This is where the genesis of the idea came from. And the two of us got talking, and it was born from that conversation, which was late last year. So between my experience in the non-bank lending and his 20 years experience in healthcare, it's come together as quite a suitable match.
Absolutely. And like most of these businesses do come about because there's been a recognition of a gap in the market. So what did you guys kind of see to be missing that your company could kind of come in there and fill that gap?
Yeah, well, it was the discussions with David, because obviously David was highly immersed in the private healthcare consultancy market. And what was quite obvious was that there was a serious opportunity to fill a gap caused by an ongoing challenge for private healthcare practitioners with regard to the insurance healthcare billing. And that was creating cash flow issues because the billing is getting higher and the days for getting paid on the bills were getting longer. And therefore, the requests were coming in from consultants up and down the country to, you know, to see if there was a solution that that could fill that gap. And when myself and David sat down, what he said to me was, if we're going to look at this particular solution, we've got to innovate something and be specialist for the healthcare sector. In other words, design a solution and design a business that specifically serves the needs of healthcare professionals and the healthcare sector.
So what kind of market research did you have to do? And I know, like you said, you know, between you, you did have experience in this because David had the 2 decades working in healthcare. But I'd imagine you had to talk to a lot of medical professionals and people kind of who deal with payment systems in those companies on the ground as well.
Yeah, I mean, David has intricate knowledge of the payment systems and the payment ecosystems, but it that doesn't really mean anything other than when you go and speak to all the valuable stakeholders. And I can't tell you how many, you know, it was well into 100 consultants up and down the country that we spoke about the idea, spoke about the solution, and basically got their feedback. And out of that, then we were able to create the innovation and create the solution that we had that we launched last Wednesday. And in that specific product, which is a product called Mediflow, it's in effect a 90-day revolving credit facility that allows the healthcare consultant who has private billings outstanding to log on to our platform, put in their IMC number, and effectively get a pre-approved amount that they can draw in order to fill that cash vacuum. And that amount is up to a maximum of 75K, and you can draw it within 24 hours.
Why is it specific to the healthcare sector? Because the way you've described it to me there, I mean, I'm imagining that this could be used in other settings as well. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. It absolutely could be used. But we thought that the healthcare sector was completely underserved by banks and non-banks. There was no one actually operating as a specialist in the market. And the market is actually quite substantial. So we thought, well, if we're going to do this, we would like to be a specialist. Mm-hmm. And in that on that basis, that's why we just concentrated on that area. So and obviously, the one thing and the clue is in the name, which is Global Health Capital, means that obviously we want to start in testing and running our business in Ireland first, and then obviously looking to expand into the UK, into continental Europe, and even beyond that over you know the next 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've just launched and all this is kind of at rollout stage. So has this product been adopted anywhere yet, or are you literally just showcasing it for the first time now?
We're literally showcasing it the first time and then handling the initial inquiries that are coming in onto the platform. Obviously, it's an incredibly exciting time. But obviously, while we're doing that, we're obviously reaching out to, you know, all the key stakeholders that consultants would go and see, like their financial advisors and their accountants and their wealth, you know, anyone that's involved with regards to managing their cash flow. Because one of the other things that we wanted to build, and that was one of the reasons why we built a digital-first platform, was because the big challenge also for healthcare consultants is time. They just don't have enough time. So we wanted to build something that was easily accessible and that was instant for application, and that drawdown was nearly immediate.
Okay. And obviously you needed funding to get this up and running as well. So do you have funding partners? How does all that work?
Yes, we do. Yes, we've an incredibly supportive partner called Santiago Capital, which gave us our first tranche of capital in order to deploy. And then as we scale and grow over the next 6 to 12 months, we'll be adding more capital with the support of our partner, Santiago. And obviously, then we'll be able to roll that capital out into further products that will enable not just healthcare consultants or private healthcare consultants, but dentists, GPs, pharmacists, also to be able to avail of capital via the Global Healthcare platform.
Okay, so obviously it's, you know, it's a really ambitious plan that you've got, but what you've also got is something that could be used in any country in the world, like you said, because no matter where you are, you're going to have private healthcare clinics, I suppose.
Yes, as my business partner David always says, that you know, it's the same challenge nearly in every jurisdiction. Mm. It's just a slight tweak on the solution. So that's that, you know, and I mean, that obviously opens our eyes to expanding the business. And obviously, being a digital first, it's not, you know, you don't have to have, you know, you only have to have a small amount of physical infrastructure, because obviously the platform can be based pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. And look, I think, but it's important for us to walk before we run. And, you know, I'm going to be spending a lot of time visiting consultants all around the country, including, you know, Waterford, which is has a good, strong healthcare system in Waterford and the surrounding counties. So it is, you know, we want to try and concentrate on making sure that we can build the business and build the solutions properly in Ireland before we reach out into other markets.
Great stuff. Graeme, where can people find out more then about Global Health Capital?
Yeah, we would absolutely encourage people to visit our website, www.globalhealthcapital.com. It's a very, very interactive platform and website. And if you want to obviously apply, it's easy, just press apply. And then if you want to get further information, there's contact details there. You can contact us directly. There's a number on there. It actually rings my mobile. So I find myself getting calls from 7 a.m. till usually about 11 at night, because obviously that's the other side of healthcare. It doesn't seem to stop.
Absolutely. And it certainly doesn't stick to 9 to 5. Well, look, that's a good sign at the same time, Graeme. So thank you very much for talking to me today. Graeme Byrne, one of the co-founders, along with David Crimmins of Global Health Capital. Best of luck with it all. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.